In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. September wheat at 401.5, up 9 cents today. December contract, 421.5, up 8 and a quarter. September wheat in Kansas City at $4.85 and a quarter, 3 and a quarter higher for the day. Now the corn pit September contract from Chicago, 247 and a quarter. They were up 6 and 3 quarters for the day. December futures, 6.5 cents higher at 264 and a quarter. And the March corn at 277.5, up 6 and a quarter. December futures, 310 and 3 quarters, up 4 and 1 quarter for the day. Soy complex, August beans, 581 and 3 quarters, up 8 and a quarter. September futures, up 8 cents at 587 and a quarter. And November beans at 601 and a quarter for this year, up 7.5 cents. November for 2007 at 655.5, were up 7.5 as well. Bean meal August contract 162.50. They were up 140. August bean oil at 26.82, and it finished 29 higher. Feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange August contract $113.17. They were off $1.25 today. August live cattle at $82.92, down 82.5 cents a hundredweight, and the October contract down 72.5 cents at 87.57 and one half. August lean hogs at $69.37, were up 77.5 on the day. Crude oil futures in the outside market September contract $75.85 a barrel, up 94. The CRB at 353.80, up 424, and the dollar at 85.09, up 0.08 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,195, and that's 69 points higher on the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as he does every Wednesday afternoon, is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. Welcome back on your nice trip, and congratulations on the cover on Patterns Magazine. You've got a lot to tell us here today.
Oh, we've got a lot of things to talk about, but let's up front, we'll talk about the commodity markets, and then we'll do the weather segment like usual. And when we come back out of that, maybe we can talk a little bit about that Patterns article and about my Ukraine trip. What do you say?
Great.
All right. Let's start with what's been happening in Chicago. Kind of interesting to watch the markets today, simply because you wouldn't think that the soft red winter wheat would be a leader in the marketplace, but she sure shot up today. What happened?
Yes, it was, Todd. The wheat market was basically a follower throughout the trading day, and we did see the wheat market basically technically driven show a lot of strength. And basically, we are trading above the 40-day moving average that basically kicked in, and we did see some good buying based on the technical side of the market, and we have seen the wheat basically suffer from harvest time, and the other perception I think is that we are going to see some preliminary reports over the next few days, one from FC Stone and also from Informa. FC Stone will be this afternoon, and I think Informa will be more of a guest estimate later on in the week with the wheat production.
And then Doan, of course, is looking to make its first stab at corn and soybean production size. I think they're due out maybe August the 4th. Let's talk a little bit about that corn market today. Pretty good run-up in the corn. Was this just hot weather led?
Yeah, one of the things that we're showing major concern is, of course, this the heat. And, of course, we're getting a lot of phone calls saying there is this tipping back of the ear. And, of course, 10 days to 2 weeks ago, we were definitely talking about the 200 to 200 plus bushel potential in big parts of the Midwest. And of course, now we're looking at the tip back and this enormous heat. The meteorologist, of course, that I have the most confidence in is basically indicating that he does think we will get some pretty good rains over the next 2 weeks. But the marketplace is basically concerned about being oversold, that's A. We did see it close above the 40-day moving average, that's 2. And the third thing here is, before the opening today, I asked the floor people in Chicago, what number is the floor basically trading? And they said definitely below 150 bushel national average. And, of course, my hunch is that I think we'll see SC Stone with a number larger than that. So we are seeing, two camps, what the people out in the country look at and what the people in Chicago look at. And the perception is, from a fundamental point of view, from demand, is that anything under 150 bushels is a very tight situation. It augurs well for a quick basis improvement after harvest. It does augur well for a price rally. And it does mean that 240, 250 harvest time lows are probably cheap enough with that kind of a situation.
Just as a reference point, USDA has been using a number of 149 while the trade's been at 153 to 155. And I think that 149 on the acreage that USDA suspects was put in the ground averages out to, about a 10.7 billion bushel corn crop for this coming year. So it may be that number that we really need to take a look at. Do you think there's 10.7 out there, or is it going to be less?
Well,
than
I think just using roughly 73.3 times 150 is almost that 11 billion bushel corn crop, and so you subtract for each bushel under that 73 million bushels, and you definitely start getting everybody's attention. And as you mentioned, the 148 bushel average, I think, is very, very supportive to the marketplace. We do know that a couple of places, Nebraska, South Dakota, missed out on the rain, parts of northwest Iowa, but the private weather guys were pretty high on northern Missouri, central Illinois, northern Illinois, all being in the hunt to really tomorrow afternoon and night, which is perfect timing for a rainfall event in Champaign, Oakland, Danville, Brockton, Arthur, Tuscola. So, we're in the hunt, and we kind of think that's a kind of an important area.
Speaking of rainfall, I've got some numbers from Mike Tenora, who operates tstorm.net. That's at www.tstorm.net. Mike, kind enough to provide these numbers, though I didn't ask him if I could use them on the air. I'll just tell you that you can go find them at www.tstorm.net. I'm sure Mike won't mind. He works has worked here in the Illinois area for quite some time. He shows in Iowa in the northwest. Astorville picked up 4.24 last night. That over the last 24 hours. Sheldon, 2.4 inches. Mason City, 1.47. Des Moines got about 8-tenths of an inch. Waterloo in the northeast, 3-tenths, about 3.5-tenths. And then as you keep going this direction or further out to Red Oak out in the southwest, just 0.14 inches. Shenandoah, Iowa in the southwest, they got 0.05 of an inch. In Minnesota, 5.03 inches in the south central area near Fairmont. St. Paul, 3.62 inches, says Mike Tumanora. Out in Nebraska, Norfolk, 2.16 inches. Grand Island, 0.5 inch or thereabouts. Lincoln, Nebraska, not picking up anything. So there was some rainfall, although they have been awfully, awfully dry, some of them pretty wet, I suppose, at this point. And if we get rainfall here, that may average out the corn crop, make it a little better across the board, but it's still been terribly hot. When you said tipping, I'm going to make a stab at this, and I assume you mean that they're going to abort the end of that crop, and so the tips won't fill in. Is that right?
That's right. And then the other thing that, the tip back of the ear and is a concern. And then, of course, the temperature's not dropping low enough to cool a plant off at night's another concern. The other one is that, the big triangle, gold and silver, were extremely strong today. Crude oil prices continue to surge. And, of course, everybody, when we look at that part of the equation, we naturally gravitate towards corn. And the corn market was a natural follower based on even outside market strength today.
Are you positive the corn market from here on out?
We're positive, and, it goes back to, informed sources tell us that the last 2 years, South American producer, particularly Brazilians, have lost a lot of money raising soybeans. Beans are below their cost of production. Major fertilizer companies are holding a large volume of debt in South America, and it's not only a good bet of unchanged acres, but actually a decrease of acreage down in South America. That means that corn is going to have to bid up for corn acres compared with a pretty good strong soybean market and also we know a good strong wheat market. So that ad kind of gives us a value-added push to push more corn acres up, and so we have to bid for it. And the best way to bid for it is raise the flat price of corn, and that augurs well for higher corn prices next year. The other factor in corn is, I'd like to just hit on it quickly,
sure,
is we're also seeing new players start building ethanol plants. It's not just two or three construction companies, but there are newer companies, new companies that are coming on and saying, hey, we can do that job too. So not only are we seeing, you know, five major companies doing it, there's more, and that means more plants quicker online in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, so there are, and it's not the fact that it's just the farmers and ADM and Panda and a couple of other places that are looking to build them, but they have more construction companies to go to build them. Is that what you
That's
mean?
That's correct.
All right. Bean market, you're positive, I assume, as
you know,
the
corn market? We're getting very close to a situation where, you know, the South American farmer is a strong holder. We've seen beans under loan come to market. I think at the end of July we saw 40 or 50 million bushels of loan beans come to the marketplace. We have another 50 to 75 million come in at the end of August, through August. So that's a market factor. We're also seeing a very good uptake in demand from China. China's finding U.S. beans cheaper than South American beans. And so that all equates to some pretty good soybean prices. I think when it's all said and done, that the big major carryover that we're looking at is still there, but we are seeing possibly an improvement of 25 to 50 million in improved demand from China, from the U.S., and that also will reduce our carryover some, and I think that will show up hopefully in the next 30 to 45 days.
And Paul, we appreciate you being with us.
Have a nice day, and welcome back to Central Illinois.
Thanks much. Hey, don't go anywhere. When I come back, we'll talk a little bit about Ukraine, okay?
That'd be great.
All right, I'll put you on hold, and we'll be back with you in just a second. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services, of course, out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That always happens on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's Mr. McCullough says there's an excessive heat warning out for the city of Chicago and southwestern Illinois until 7 o'clock tonight. That, of course, issued by the National Weather Service. A heat advisory for central and southern Illinois and all of Indiana until 7 o'clock tonight as well. This afternoon, in northern sections, partly to mostly sunny, a chance of some thunderstorms. Elsewhere, to be mostly sunny, hot, and humid. Highs will range from 100 in the southern sections to 90 in the far north. Tonight, in northern sections, cloudy, a period of showers, some thunderstorms. In central sections, it'll become mostly cloudy, some showers, some thunderstorms possible after midnight. And in the south, partly cloudy. Lows will range from 80 in the far south to 66 in the north. And tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy skies across the two-state with periods of showers, a few thunderstorms. Some storms may be severe and produce locally heavily rainfall. Highs ranging from 92 in the south to 78 in the north. Speaking of rainfall, Jim Angel over at the state climatologist office sent this report out. He says preliminary data for the state of Illinois indicate that July's 4.38 inches of rainfall was about a half an inch above normal. The only areas with rainfall below normal were around Quincy and across the south-central part of Illinois along Interstate 70. Amounts there generally less than an inch below normal. Precip, says Jim Angel, in northeastern and much of the southern part of the state was above normal. Cisco, which isn't too terribly far away from here in Champaign and very near Decatur, reported not only the heaviest one-day rainfall at 6.23 inches on July 27th. That exceeded the amount from a six-hour 100-year storm, but also was the highest monthly total at 4.27 inches. July statewide average temp, by the way, at 77.3 degrees. That's 1.5 degrees above normal. And it makes it the 26th hottest July on record. Temperature extremes range from 46 at Mount Carroll on July the 7th to 101 in Quincy on July the 31st. By the way, July 1936, still the hottest July on record for Illinois with temperatures 7.7 degrees above normal. Paul Cooley back with us now to take a little talk a little bit about my trip to Ukraine. Thanks for joining me this afternoon, Paul.
It was a lot of fun to talk to you about your trip, Todd.
It was an interesting trip, and I told this story up front on Monday, but it sets the tone for the rest of the trip. We stepped off the plane in Kiev. The airport there is not particularly large, though the city's about 2 million in size. Footprint's very small, only takes maybe 15, 20 minutes to get from the very center of town to the outskirts of town. Everything's straight up, 10, 12 stories high apartment complex. We got into a van, just a little bigger than a minivan, and we got all this stuff inside the van. There were 6 people there from their delegation, 5 from ours, so there were 11 of us in the van. We had 20 pieces of luggage, and 4 of them were the great big suitcases. Stuffed us all in there, and we made a 5-hour road trip on bumpy roads with a van that didn't have much of a shock system, I suppose, probably because all the weight in it, to Poltava, which is along the Dnieper River, and no air condition, and that trip set the tone for what the rest of the program is going to look like. It was just an adventure all the way. Paul, the soils are deep, 3 foot. Where we were, dark black soils. They were raising a lot of good crops. They raise in the areas we were sunflower and sugar beet, corn, soybeans, and of course wheat, both spring wheat and hard wheat.
Did you see any country elevators or any storage facilities, Todd, where you're there?
Yeah, there are storage. We saw a large storage facility. It was and these were fairly common. I saw one that was it was about 6.2 million bushels in size, and so everything goes into those, and how they move them. I assume by rail. We weren't close enough to see whether they moved out from rail there or not. But it looks to me like they have enough ability to move crop around. And they have very much the same. If you picked Illinois up and just put it there, but made it a little drier, the flora, the fauna, the weed spectrum, when you look down, look the same in the fields. They had red fox there, red-tailed hawks there. The weeds were the same. The weather was really pretty nice, though it's usually hot. It was a few degrees cooler than it should have been and not as humid, which is good when you don't have air condition. But it sure looks like they're poised to make things work. The other thing is that the Dnieper River that splits Ukraine in half, and Ukraine's about the size of Texas, runs right to the Black Sea, and it's as big as the Mississippi, it appears to me. So they've got transportation.
Did you see much change from the old commune farms to more individual operators or anything like that, a reform in the farming sector?
Yeah, this is the interesting point. Every place was a collective farm, about 20,000 acres in size. And I've got photos that we'll put up in the next week and a half and make sure that everybody can get to them and take a look at this. And they really ripped those apart, not right after the fall of the Soviet Union, but a few years later when people were really more or less scared that somebody was going to go in and take the asset. And so they just came in and they didn't have anything. When the Soviet Union fell apart, you know, every job, everything you did was centrally controlled. And when it fell apart, nobody knew what they were going to do. And they still have a trouble, it seems to me, making decisions about what to do. So when they looked at this collective farm, especially for many of the places that would be a town of 450 or so, it was the centerpiece for every job at that community. So there were people who were licensed to be tractor drivers, and they still are, even in today's society there, licensed to be a combine driver. If you were, you might be licensed. I don't know whether you had to be a license to be work in the milk parlor or not, but you were assigned what you were going to do, and that's what you did. You could be a dentist, you could be a doctor, but those were all assigned and based on testing, I suppose, as you came through school. And everybody that worked on those farms was given a plot of land, something between 2 and 10 acres, depending on where they were. So there are thousands upon thousands of landowners there. And at this point, the government has says you cannot sell your property. So you can't go in and buy land in Ukraine at this time. And
Did the infrastructure look like the 1940s or 50s, or is it becoming more modern?
1940s and 50s.
It sounds like the roads and everything were a little bumpy, and air conditioners not really a part of the landscape either.
No air conditions. The roads are bumpy. Yeah, it looked a lot more like the 1940s and 1950s. They were using horses in some places, not for heavy equipment movement, but we were in a dairy where the horses were drawing carts through the dairy barn for feed. I saw a lot of the local people would have horses that would be horse-drawn carts just to move things from one place to the other. Gasoline costs the same there as it does here. But there, for instance, their workers, I was on one farm, privately held farm, the workers there were making $40 a week. We were on a farm where a man had gone from 50 hectares to 700, which is about 2,000 acres. He had 24 employees. And he was harvesting wheat at that point. He had one combine, and it had a 12-foot platform on it. He was running that thing 15 to 18 hours a day. I asked him if it was hard to get parts, and he said no, which surprised me. I called Dad and told him, and Dad's first question, I didn't actually get the answer to this. I assume because it's dry that they have just a longer window to harvest whether that crop went down. But he had two guys sitting on that combine, one who was a driver and the other guy, because the fields were so big, sat in behind the bin of the combine, and he just reached in and moved the grain around so that he could get more grain into the tank before they came to the end.
Did they ask you many questions about U.S. agriculture?
They did, consistently and constantly. We had an animal scientist with us, an agronomist, a human community development person, myself as a journalist, and then we had the leader of the team was farm management. The animal scientist and the agronomist were busy constantly. Their livestock operations are going to take some time to get back up and running because they dismantled them completely. Some of the cows are just cows, and you see them tied all over the place, just single cows, a single goat, in ditches, anywhere there was grass. But those herds have been decimated, probably eaten a lot of them, and so their livestock operations have a long ways to come back up because they don't have, you know, they don't have sires, they don't have dames to put those back in place. It's poised to come back as a huge economic boon to Ukraine, as far as I can tell. It's almost there, but they're in the process of trying to figure out how to still employ a lot of people and adapt Western agriculture. It's going to be tough because, you know, we had time. We lost a lot of farmers, but they moved relatively slowly to the cities. They've got people that are sitting in towns that, you know, aren't employed. And they've got to go somewhere very quickly, and they haven't moved just yet. So it's going to be a tough haul, but I think they will be competition. I saw Northrop King there. I saw Pioneer there. I saw Emerson Nafziger told me he in early July he was at a field day for Syngenta, John Deere. I saw, I didn't see John Deere combines, but I was told that 1,000 of them had been bought by the government in the 90s. I saw a brand new New Holland combine on the road on the back of a flatbed. I saw a lot of actually New Holland, regular sized New Holland combines moving through the fields too. So it is poised to probably compete with the U.S., I would think, in terms of getting crop to Western Europe and into Russia.
What's the biggest opportunity? Is it the livestock sector? Is it the dairy? As far as the agricultural side?
Livestock's going to take time to rebuild. I think that's a big opportunity. Agriculture is going to grain agriculture will be easy to adapt. The problem is that it doesn't take the labor. And so if you wanted to go over, I think it will be far easier to adapt. Louis Dreyfus is there putting biodiesel plants in. Cargill was there. I heard about elevators from Cargill. The machinery dealers are already in place. So, grain production is going to be fairly easy. Livestock production is going to be tougher. But I think it may have more of the opportunity to make money than than the grain side. So that's just a little bit about Ukraine. We appreciate you being with us, Paul. Thanks
Well, thanks, and have a nice day, Todd. Wonderful to talk to you.
Yeah, bye-bye, Paul. Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. We've gone a little bit past our time now. We'll hit the news with the ag staff here at WILL, with the news staff here at WILL. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Todd, and with this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. During a visit to Illinois today, U.S. Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman said the federal government will fund two bioenergy research centers in an effort to accelerate research and the development of cellulosic ethanol and other biofuels. Universities, laboratories, nonprofit organizations, and private companies will submit competing proposals to set up and run the centers, which are expected to be fully operational by 2009. Bodman made the announcement today in the Grundy County town of Shanahan. Champaign County Board Member Catherine Hogue says she hasn't decided yet whether to stay in the race for county clerk, but the Champaign Democrat says she's recovering well from a stroke last month and plans to meet with her campaign chairman soon to make her decision. Hogue is the Democratic challenger to incumbent county clerk Mark Sheldon. Two inmates have died at the Indiana State Prison in Michigan City since Sunday, and prison officials are investigating whether the heat was a factor in their deaths. The prison cells are not air-conditioned, and highs have been in the 90s in Michigan City the last few days. Lawmakers say Indiana's constitution will have to be changed before they can enforce tougher standards for county coroners. Members of a legislative study committee say they'd like to set up new training and certification rules for elected coroners, even without a constitutional change. Champaign area nurse Patty Metzler was honored in a surprise ceremony today. The Carle Foundation Hospital nurse was awarded the State of Illinois' People Are Today's Heroes Award for her leadership role in several outreach and public safety programs. Metzler says she's especially pleased with the longevity of the Risk Watch program, which goes into the classroom to teach Champaign-Urbana students how to avoid accidental injuries. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Morris at 815-941-3706. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Drew Lerner of the World Weather Incorporated. He's a senior agricultural meteorologist there in Kansas City to take a look at the hot weather across the nation. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Is it right? Are we going to find some cooler weather soon?
Well, it looks like it's moving along. We've got a cool front cutting across the Midwest here this afternoon, and it will continue to advance to the south. Our temperatures will be much more seasonable as we move through the latter part of this week and into the weekend. How long it lasts depends on where you are. In the Midwest, the western areas will heat back up again as we go into early next week. But the eastern half of the belt, most areas east of the Mississippi River, will probably be seeing a seasonable range of temperatures through a big part of next week. So we should be done with all the warm and humid conditions. The humidity will be with us for a long time. But the heat will definitely be abating from the region. And we should get some rain and thunderstorms moving through parts of the Midwest overnight, tonight, and tomorrow especially, to help add a little more comfort to the air.
And longer term, does it look like it'll return, or are we going to stay more normal?
Well, the eastern half of the Midwest will probably have a fairly normal finish out for the summer season. I think both August and early September will end up being a relatively normal time period for temperatures. Rainfall will occur again on a regular basis, but not as frequent as we've been seeing it. That's mainly a byproduct of the seasonal changes that we usually get this time of the year. So everything looks like it'll progress fairly normally in the eastern part of the region. The western areas, though, I think we'll continue to be looking at a high pressure ridge rather frequently as we go through the next several weeks. It's not necessarily going to set over the Corn Belt proper there in the west. But we will see it fluctuate between the plains and the western Corn Belt to generate a little bit of drought. A little dry and heat problems continuing periodically as we go through time.
We appreciate you being with us today, Drew.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated, out of Kansas City. Join us here on the Closing Market Report. That is the CMR for this Wednesday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Open the door to great prizes for your home. Enter the WILL sweepstakes. It's your chance to win a two-piece grand prize, a flat-screen high-definition television set from Glenn Poor's Audio Video in Champaign, and a family theater sofa from Carter's Furniture. Watch your mail for the sweepstakes packet and enter soon. To request an entry form, call 217-333-1070.